And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, October 8, 2020. South Sudan's minister condemns an attack on WFP convoy in Lake State.
Four boats that were attacked in the afternoon close to Shambay North in Lake State. And in that ambush, one of the vessels was sunk.
And police officers detained senior priests of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan in Jonglei State.
With the security, we are now talking to all the bishops, including Akudit. We wanted to know where the differences came.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations World Food Programme says one aid worker is missing and three others were wounded in an attack on a boat convoy travelling from Bor to Melut to deliver aid. WFP's country director for South Sudan says the convoy was carrying food items intended for the people displaced by floods in Upper Nile State when gunmen attacked the boat at Shambay in Lake State. Humanitarian Affairs Minister Mayen Majongdit condemns the attack, saying the government will do what is possible to prevent further attacks on aid workers. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
WFP says the four cargo vessels loaded with food items had 13 crew members on board. The convoy was headed to Malakal and Melut towns in Upper Nile State to deliver aid to people displaced by floods. Matthew Hollingsworth, WFP's country director for South Sudan, says the food convoy fell into an ambush on the Nile River Monday afternoon in Lagos State.
Four boats that were attacked in the afternoon close to Shambay North in Lagos State. And in that ambush, one of the vessels was sunk, losing the food that was loaded on the vessel. It seems, unfortunately, one of the crew members was hit by gunfire and is now missing and sadly presumed killed.
Hollingsworth says three crew members sustained gunshot wounds and listed in a stable condition at a nearby hospital. He says the vessels were carrying 225 metric tons of food intended for thousands of people displaced by recent floods in Upper Nile State.
That's enough food to feed more than 14,000 people for a month. That was what was being delivered. Unfortunately, the vessel that sank had 50 tons of food on the vessel, which is now completely lost. But we've not been able to continue the deliveries to Malakal because, obviously, the crews themselves are badly affected by the attack. And so we will redirect those commodities elsewhere.
For now, Hollingsworth says the WFP has suspended the use of food boat convoys on the Nile until they are confident that the perpetrators of Monday's attack are found and held accountable. He says persistent attacks on aid workers and humanitarian convoys only make the already deteriorating humanitarian situation in South Sudan worse.
Every act of violence against humanitarian workers, be they transporting or delivering humanitarian assistance around the country, it slows down our work, it makes our work harder to do, and it has a serious impact on South Sudanese citizens. And sadly, sort of senseless attacks are quite frequent, not always on the World Food Programme, but on other humanitarian organisations.
Whether they are on the river, on the roads, or travelling in remote parts of the country, they always hinder the ability of humanitarians to save lives or change lives, said Hollingsworth. He is calling on the South Sudan government and authorities to end conflict in the country and respect humanitarian workers and enable them to have unimpeded access to the South Sudanese people who are in desperate need of humanitarian support. Helen Nedohu, head of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, condemned the attack and called on the government to ensure that similar attacks don't happen again. South Sudan Humanitarian Affairs Minister Peter Mayen Majungdit condemned the incident and says the entire unity government takes responsibility for the attack, no matter who the perpetrators are.
Whoever has those forces there that have committed such kind of actions, so whether the forces belong to the IO, whether the forces belong to SOA, or the forces belong to the government, we all take the blame because we have formed a government and we have committed ourselves to the people of South Sudan.
Mayen says the government is investigating the attack and remains committed to protecting humanitarian workers.
It has also come to the notice of the president. I met the Minister of Presidency, the Presidential Affairs, yesterday, and we discussed the matter with him. And we will continue to make sure that at least we foster and strengthen our security system so that at least humanitarian workers, and when they are delivering humanitarian assistance and work, they are protected.
Hollingsworth says the WFP does not know who attacked the aid convoy. Lagos State authorities say they are not aware of any attack on humanitarian convoy on the River Nile. Mayor Mo, press secretary in the office of the governor, says Lagos State does not have people stationed along the Nile.
We have not received any report regarding that attack. But personally, what I know, we, Lagos State, have no people along the River Nile in general. Because you understand the crisis between Lagos State and Yonglei, people fought along the Nile, and then the national government took over the responsibility of the Nile by bringing the forces from Juba. And then they were deployed on the Nile. From that time up to now, Lagos State, as it is today, has never got any people along the River Nile.
UN OCHA says some 800,000 people have been affected by flooding in South Sudan since July. It says 37 counties, or nearly half of the country, has been affected by floods. Many areas are still underwater and people are unable to tend to their lands or livestock, according to UN OCHA. The UN agency says some 368,000 people have been displaced, and of that number, women and children are the most affected. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
The disagreement over the appointment of the Archbishop of the Internal Province of Yonglei in the Episcopal Church of South Sudan has developed into fist fights. Police in Yonglei State Capital Bor have detained the acting Archbishop of the Yonglei Internal Province, John Panchol Kon, and the Dean of St. Andrew Cathedral for allegedly inciting riots. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
The primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, Justin Badiarama, appointed Reverend John Panchol Kon as the new Bishop Commissary for Bor Diocese in August to replace Archbishop Ruben Akurdit after Arama accused Akurdit of disobedience and dividing Christians. Akurdit denied the allegation. Reverend Panchol says he came to Bor last week to assume his new responsibilities. But Yonglei State Police Commissioner General Joseph Mayena Akon says the police have detained Panchol and the Dean of St. Andrew's Cathedral, Thomas Ago, for organizing the riots, which he says caused public disorder in Bor Town on Tuesday.
Those who came and threatened Panchol told to go back when we took Panchol, then we brought him here. Now, it was a but the issue was that they don't want Panchol. We, the security, we are now talking to all the bishops, including Akudit. We wanted to know where the differences came between them. This is what we wanted to know. They came from Juba as one people. Then when they arrive board, they become different.
Panchol says a group of armed clergymen and local youth allied to Akurdit invaded his residence and attacked him at the White Nile Hotel in Bor on Tuesday. He says the group threatened to kill him.
I say, what is the connection? If it is a church affairs, we have cathedral. So if you need it, then be patient. Go back, and then I will call the bishop, and if the bishop around, they will go to the where bishop according to this, then they will go and negotiate if there is anything concerned church. But you cannot come here and found me where I sleep and you say call the bishop. So some they were just make violent. They say they were, we will kill you and we will just hold you. We can put you out here in this compound. That one, the government interfere and bring me to the police. They go and ask me with a go.
Panchul is urging his supporters to refrain from resorting to violence, saying the matter is a church affair and should be handled amicably. He says the church should be preaching peace and harmony, not violence, to settle disputes.
My advice to people, this is a church affair. And whether if I belong to my community, I'm not a man of community. I'm just belong to Christ. So I can advise my people that let them stay away. This is a church affair.
David Kaur, Deputy Information Coordinator for the Bor Diocese, admits a group of clergymen and youth went to the hotel to urge Panchul to leave Bor because they believe his presence is causing confusion in the church and community.
The coming of John Panchul Kukon has a lot of issues. We divided people in a group in the church and in the community. So we say that John Panchul Kukon, we are no longer stand with you. You go back from where you're coming. He didn't agree. He said that I was being appointed, so I want to take my office.
Kaur says Panchul's very presence in Bor is a threat to peace, and that is why members of the community want Panchul to leave. When South Sudan in Focus asked Akurdit in August what would happen if the newly appointed bishop commissary went to Bor to take up his new assignment, he responded, quote, "Let him try." The row between Archbishop Akurdit and Primate Badi began late last year when Akurdit created three more dioceses in the Jonglei internal province and consecrated three bishops without prior approval from Badi, who also serves as the Archbishop of the Metropolitan Diocese of Juba. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
South Sudan's National Minister of Youth and Sports has suspended the construction of a FIFA-funded Juba football stadium after part of the stadium collapsed on Tuesday. The minister says a committee composed of FIFA and local engineers will investigate why a portion of the stadium collapsed. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
South Sudan Youth and Sports Minister Albino Ball halted all construction work on the stadium Wednesday and ordered an investigation into the overall quality of work and materials being used on the construction project.
The work has to be ceased for a while till further notice, because I'm going to consult with the Vice President and the head of the cluster, Her Excellency Mama Rebecca Dimabior, who is the head of the sport and gender and youth cluster, and also the Vice President for the infrastructure. We are going to have a team, and the ministry itself is going to have a technocrat that are coming to inspect together with the FIFA engineer and the resident engineer and also the constructor engineering team to come and evaluate.
Emmanuel Yokwe is a resident engineer hired by the South Sudan Football Association, the body overseeing the stadium construction work, to supervise the project. He describes what happened on Tuesday.
What we call the shooter knocked the supporters, and because the concrete is heavy, the weight of the shooter caused the site to slide, and it resulted into the collapse of the wall because the wet concrete fell down.
Engineer Girma Sifara, the managing director at GS Construction, the company building the stadium, says a partial roof collapse on Tuesday does not affect overall construction of the stadium.
The shooter knocked the support, and the support, the fresh concrete has come down. So this is what happened usually. It happens in so many construction places, big like this one. And it's not a major incident, and it has nothing to do with the structure of the stadium.
Sifaira says the partial roof collapse affected a little over 5 meters out of a total 184 meters of the 5,000-seat stadium construction project, and it will cost the company less than $3,000 to repair.
From this, what happened was 5.3 meter span, one span, and we have casted 3,000 meter cube concrete in this stadium. What has come down is only 40 meter cube. Imagine for yourself how minor.
South Sudan private engineer John Ayuen does not see it that way. He says the partial collapse at the construction site could impact GS Construction's future business deals in South Sudan.
I have just tried to analyze the part that collapsed. They call it a minor collapse or incident. But of course, a small thing that has happened in a structure can cause stresses in the whole structure, especially when one part collapses, the other parts also become weaker because of the stress or the force that has been transferred through the whole structure.
Ayuen also accuses GS Construction of underpaying workers and hiring cheap engineers who might not be experienced in dealing with such large projects.
This company, in fact, is an international company, but they go for cheap engineers, people who are not qualified enough to advance their work. That affects the work output or the workmanship or the final product of the work that they do. So if they keep having such issues of building collapsing under construction, of course it will spoil their credibility and trust. In the public.
Ball says the government is not downplaying the matter because it wants to ensure that quality work is being performed on the site.
It seemed to be a minor issue, but as the ministry, we will not leave it like that because it's something touching the life of the people of South Sudan. And as the government, we must make sure that everything is done properly in order to build the confidence of the people.
GS Construction is registered both in Ethiopia and South Sudan. It won the contract to build Juba Stadium last year. The project is being supervised by the South Sudan Football Association. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, when was the last time you went to a cinema hall? Stay tuned for more on the future of movie theaters around the world. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
why do you think more young people are turning away from farming?
You know, for you to farm, to be a farmer, you have to wait. I'm waiting until, you know, these guys, they don't want to wait. They want the money now. They don't want you to, maybe you plant your corn or maize or yam and you have to wait till probably like how many months before it germinates and before you can even harvest.
Maybe because they view farming to be an old occupation or vocation that I'm mostly for the villagers. But then I feel farming, it's one that I know you can generate money from.
In most cases, young people in Africa think white-collar jobs are the most earning. But in the real sense, it's the reverse.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The parent company of the second largest movie theater chain in America is indefinitely closing all 536 U.S. locations as new movie releases are being postponed and people remain reluctant to go to theaters because of the coronavirus pandemic. Cineworld Group says it's closing Regal cinemas in U.S. along with 125 Cineworld and Picture House venues across Britain. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
The Cineworld Group is indefinitely closing more than over 530 Regal movie theaters in the United States and about 125 venues in Britain. The move will affect 45,000 employees, says Chief Executive Muki Gredinger.
I think that we reached a stage that we had no alternative. It's a very, very difficult decision for us, mainly in view of the move that we need to take towards the employees. It's not simple.
The group had shuttered its movie theaters after the coronavirus outbreak, but reopened back in July.
And really at the beginning, we got a very warm welcome from our customers, and we saw the people were missing the cinema. People want to go back to the cinema, but in a certain stage, we didn't have the goods.
That's because movie studios were postponing new releases, like the latest James Bond movie.
James Bond.
So for now, it doesn't make sense to stay open, says the Cineworld chief.
We were in a kind of a situation that from liquidity point of view, we were bleeding much bigger amounts when we are open than when we are closed, because we'll be like a grocery shop with no food. And we had to take this decision.
Meanwhile, AMC Entertainment, the largest theater chain in the world, said on Tuesday most of its theaters in the U.S. and Europe will remain open. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
COVID-19 restrictions have forced beaches to close near Australia's biggest city as scorching spring temperatures sent thousands of people to the coast. Beachgoers also were warned to stay away from Sydney's most famous arc of sand at Bondi as it neared capacity. For VOA News, Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Heading to the coast is a quintessential Australian pastime. But warmer weather in the southern hemisphere is testing the nation's plans to keep the coronavirus at bay. Visitor numbers are now limited, and two beaches south of Sydney were closed to avoid overcrowding. Swimmers also were told to avoid Bondi and Coogee, as thousands of people flocked to two of Sydney's most popular arcs of sand. COVID-19 marshals and the police have been on patrol to ensure people stayed a towel length apart. The authorities have said the public's response has been encouraging, but beachgoers have had mixed opinions about the safety measures.
I think it's pretty good. I think everyone's social distancing, so I think it's fine.
I'm absolutely outraged, to be honest. This is ridiculous. It's too many people. Yes, I am here as well, and I'm going to go have a swim, but, you know, we shouldn't be, should we?
Australia has recorded about 27,000 COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began, and 900 people have died. Most states and territories have managed to contain the coronavirus. Queensland has reported no new infections in the past day. Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk says the community is heeding hygiene and distancing advice.
Once again, I just want to congratulate Queenslanders for the great work that they have done. The results that we have had because of our health response has been because Queenslanders have listened. We have seen that time and time again, whether it's dealing with cyclones and natural disasters, whether it's dealing with bushfires. Queenslanders come together. It's an incredible story.
Lockdown measures, however, still apply in the city of Melbourne. Residents can only leave home for essential activities. Health officials there have said that restrictions will ease later this month if infection rates continue to fall. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
From Sydney, we move back to Africa, where Zimbabwe's back-to-school program is failing to take off, with most teachers refusing to return to classes because of low pay and concerns about COVID-19. The teachers want a 500% salary increase to get out of poverty and say authorities must provide adequate personal protective equipment during the pandemic. For VOA News, Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe, like other African countries, is trying a phased reopening of schools after closing in March due to COVID-19. But many teachers, like 33-year-old Munyaradzi Masiwa, are refusing to return to class, pointing to low pay and unsafe conditions. Masiwa says he makes more money selling brooms than teaching at Cranbourne Boys Government High School in Harare.
We have got the zeal, we love the kids at school, but only if the government manages to capacitate us. We are under incapacitation situation. We are in a situation where we cannot raise transport fares for us to connect our home and our workstation. If we have got food at the table, and also the most important thing, we need to have a living wage of $520. The salary that we were getting in 2018 is just the restoration of our dignity. I will be happy to report for duty.
Zimbabwe's teachers say they want at least $500 per month and equipment like masks, face shields, and hand sanitizer to protect themselves against COVID-19. Zimbabwe's cash-strapped government says it has procured $6 million worth of PPEs for schools. Public Service Minister Paul Mavima says teacher salaries about $100 a month, including a $75 COVID-19 allowance, is all the government can afford.
It is within this context that we are saying to the civil servants, please be realistic, exercise moderation in the manner in which you demand salary increases. We don't want salary increases that will upset the stability that we have so far realized and further torpedo the economic recovery that we have started to see.
Without teachers in class, Zimbabwe school children are the ones left paying the price. At Glenview High School, students say they only discuss lessons among themselves. Fielda Rusheje is one of their parents. She's worried the children won't learn enough to pass their exams. She says the situation at schools is a tough one. They are going to school, but they are not learning. My daughter says they are just discussions among learners. They are not even sure if it's making sense because teachers are not coming, she says. I just wish if the government can negotiate with the teachers so that our children can learn. I want them to look after us in future, she says. Zimbabwe's government has threatened to replace defiant teachers like Masiwa if they do not soon return to the classrooms. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
Before we end this show, I have a special announcement for you. This program can now be heard in South Sudan at 7:30 p.m. local time on VOA affiliate stations. Please inform your friends and relatives.
Shop upon the beat.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with a song about rape by some top South Sudanese artists.
De umahataku matakun sabab takarabu haya de jena taki matakun sabab takarabu haya tabu bataki bijibu mutu bijibu kore bijibu kere hiya bijibu waja bijibu jena wagifu
wetu mutu bongo nyodo kona kindalele mutu tina nyo wai 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 Akwider karabu brother gone suicidal waere pa brother deka anu ita atanu akomali sabes can never go away lepeng di sister nanje tubongo oh nange bai alula let anabiga marasaki why killer brother's confidence manhood mental health and spiritual think of him his family his future his dream and his vision
Matakum sabab matakum sabab ta wajade
Matakum sabab matakum sabab ta wajade Mata sibu zokere is wajade Matakum sabab ta wajade Mata sibu zokere is wajade
We have been listening to some top South Sudanese artists singing about rape. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Let's stop this evil, though. This is necessary noise that we speak in, though, to the unspeakable. Rape, that's horrific, to be specific.